Imagine this. A stranger comes to your door and asks to rent your basement. He promises to pay plenty and make it worth your while. You have some misgivings, but your mortgage is overdue and you're unemployed. That's the beginning of author Walter Mosley's latest book, The Man in My Basement. And Mr. Mosley joins us from our New York bureau. Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you.
Well, this is a story of two men whose lives are worlds apart. 33-year-old Charles Blakey, an African-American slacker fired from his last job, spends his days alone on Long Island in the home his family has owned for generations. Aniston Bennett is a wealthy 57-year-old WASP who calls himself a reclamations expert for hire. And, Mr. Mosley, I'm going to have you just start reading now from page 124.
Okie doke. I don't think the money interested me, even that far back. And I was worried that once Bennett dug in, he'd be hard to dislodge. I was drunk, but not that drunk. I remember the night and every word that was spoken. Maybe the whiskey made me a little less fearful. The consequences that bothered me earlier, and the next morning, for that matter, seemed manageable. But that's not why I agreed to Bennett's request. I agreed because of knowledge and intimacy. Those shocking blue eyes looked right into mine and knew what they were seeing. Not like Bethany, and not like Clarence. And unlike Uncle Brent, Bennett made no judgments. If he felt that he was better than me, it was only because he felt better than everyone, and that, in some strange whiskey-soaked way, made me an equal in the world, at least in the world as seen through his eyes. "Yeah, all right," I said. "Let's do this thing."
We have here, Mr. Mosley, two very different men, but they both seem to be struggling. What was the struggle for each man?
Well, the struggle for Charles Blakey is to become a man, and he doesn't know how to do it. He's lost in a way. He's never really had to do anything. Being from a black family out on Long Island, as far back as he can figure, nobody in his family had ever even been a slave. And this hasn't helped him so much as actually hindered him some, because he's never known his direction. Aniston Bennett, on the other hand, is the man who represents that shadowy realm of capitalism, international capitalism. He's a man who only wants to reap wealth. And in doing that, he does some really evil things. And he's trying to come to grips with that.
Mm-hmm. He was a scary individual.
Well, what I wanted to do was I wanted to show a meeting between evil and innocence. Not good and evil, but evil and innocence. And I see Blakey as an innocent who doesn't really know anything about the world that he lives in, or about himself for that matter. And that once he comes into contact with Aniston Bennett, he has to begin to deal with what he thinks is right and wrong in the world. In a way, it's kind of an updated version of one of the existentialist novels in the middle of the 20th century. Not one particular one, but that breed of novel. Trying to get somebody to understand who they are in the world and how they need to be in that world.
Well, Aniston Bennett, what he said he needed was a cage. He ended up in a cage in the basement, correct?
Well, he wanted to punish himself, because one of Bennett's problems is not only that he's evil, but the whole world he lives in is evil. And so he can't go to turn himself into the system and say, well, you know, take me to court and try me. One, because they would never do it. And two, because they're corrupt themselves. And so he's trying to figure out, well, how can I punish myself? How can I come to grips with what I've done? And of course, it's a very difficult thing. If you decide to imprison yourself, that's not such a bad thing, right?
Well, I'm not sure about that. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm looking at this guy, Bennett. He's a very responsible character. The evil aside, he works hard. He does very important things. His phone, if it rings at 3 o'clock in the morning, he has to get up, get dressed, and get out there and get on a plane and fly 10,000 miles. He has no question. He is in charge. I imagine a guy like that would love it if he could be in a place where all he had was four walls and some books. And he'd just sit there, and somebody would bring him his food, and somebody would empty his porta-potty, and when he wanted to read, you know, the third volume of The History of Civilization, he just said, well, hand me that book, will you please, and read that book. It's not all that awful if you're not being beaten and berated and raped and all kinds of other things that might happen to you in prison. He's in charge. He's paying for this. This is, in a way, almost like a spa for him.
Almost, but not quite a vacation.
No, but no, he has to remember he's done some evil things, and so he's treating himself as a prisoner. But what happens is, once his jailer begins to treat him as a prisoner, that's when the real dynamics of the relationship come into play.
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, this book is about power, and it was real interesting to see the shift in power for Bennett. And I'd like you to read a little bit about that.
Oh, okie doke. Good morning, Mr. Bennett, I said at 6:45. I snapped on the light and he jerked up from his mattress on the floor. Good morning. I shoved the cold cereal and fruit under the door and sat on the trunk. Here's the deal, I said. Bennett sat in his red chair and ran his hand down across his face until he was clasping his throat. Go on, he said. Everything is a privilege. Food is a privilege, and so is water and light and the books to read. And if you want me to be the warden of your life, then that's just what I'll be. How do I earn these privileges? Bennett asked. He was very serious. I will ask you questions, and you will answer them. If you refuse, or if I don't like your answers, then a privilege will be taken away. If I don't like your attitude, I will suspend privileges. If you lie, the same thing. But how will you know if I'm lying? You will have to prove it to me. Don't forget your money, he said. I don't care about the money. All I care about is my rules and my jail.
And this is where Blakey really starts to realize that he has some sort of power as well.
Well, he tries to utilize his power. He tries to he realizes that he's completely overwhelmed by this man. Even though the man is in a cell, in prison, he feels as if he's enslaved to this man, and he's trying to break free in his own way. And in this breaking free, he's trying to realize a life.
Well, I won't give away the ending to this novel, but I will just say that it's very unexpected.
Well, it's very short. You could tell them that. You get to the end very quickly.
Yeah.
It's one of my shorter books.
It is one of your shorter books. And I should also say that even though the ideas might be, you know, very contemplative and what we might consider heavy, that the book is an easy read.
You know, it's not so hard to write a novel of ideas or an intellectual novel, any harder than it is to write anything else like a mystery where you have to, you know, follow a plot or whatever. But the real difficult thing is to write a story that's really a story that really unfolds and there are actions and you're wondering what happens next. And you don't spend too much time talking specifically about, you know, well, this idea or working out that theory or this notion. You know, the great existentialist novels are just that. They're about people living their lives in the real world, because ideas and your life, you know, they're together. They're not separate things.
Mm-hmm. The Man in My Basement, Walter Mosley's newest book. He's been speaking to us from our New York bureau. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And to read more about author Walter Mosley, go to our website at npr.org.